Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunatu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so page 88, Adhikarna 14. The jiva is a performer of actions. Kartra Adhikaranam, Sutra reference 2.3.31-40. Adhikarna Pakashika. The Shankais claim that, quote, Prakriti is the agent, end quote. Since I'm not the doer, Prakriti is the doer, right? I'm not doing it, so they're doing it, right? You know, if I say, devil made me do it, right? Verily implies that one desires to ignore the accountability for one's dishonest actions performed. For the benefits, however, I'm the doer. This position is clearly political. However, the Vedanta's claim of jiva to be the agent is methodically demonstrated herein by the sutrakar as follows. Why the jiva's agent? Scriptures give lessons in the performance of dharmic activities only to a conscious being, the jiva, humans. Hence, Srila Vyasadeva begins his composition with Vedanta Sutra 111, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, which confirms that inquiry into Brahman begins in the human form of life. The jiva, by its own shakti, supported by prana, holds on to gross and subtle senses as the instruments for accomplishing his task. Nonetheless, when the Shastras mention that the jiva is not the agent, it simply indicates that he has no independence. The jiva's agency depends on the Supreme Lord and functions only because the Lord resides within the jiva as Paramatma. This is earlier proved in Vedanta Sutra 2.1.23.24. Asmad divach cha tad anupapatihi and upasamhara darsh. Darshanan neti chen na shiravadhi, that the jiva fails as a creator, because even though the jiva is conscious, he is not independent. He is like a stone, piece of wood, or lump of clay. The Lord is within all jivas and controls them all. Although accomplishment of acts is seen in the jiva, he accomplishes it because of the Lord, not independently, since the jiva is dependent on his actions, just as a cow is dependent in producing milk. This doesn't illustrate that since the jiva lacks independence and is completely helpless, shastras become useless and the Lord becomes cruel. This misunderstanding was earlier clarified in Vedanta Sutra 2.1.34. Vaishamya nair grimye na sapek shavat tata hi darshayati. That the Lord is neither prejudiced nor cruel because bodies are created according to karma. Scripture shows this. Only a total lack of independence, free will on the jiva's part would make him achit, and shastras would be meaningless. In actuality, jiva's dependency, end quote, simply denotes that the jiva uses his free will to act either piously or impiously. That motivates the Lord to suitably reward or rebuke the jiva. Therefore, the Lord's will follows the jiva's will. Hence, the jiva is the agent. By Prakriti is not the agent. Previously, the opponents claimed that the jiva is the enjoyer. However, when they attribute the agency to Prakriti, the jiva no longer remains the enjoyer, but Prakriti becomes the enjoyer. This is unseen. In the earliest Pada, Vedanta Sutra 1.1.18, Kamach cha nanu manu peksha. Kamachta nanumana peksha. Yeah. The Sutrakar verified that one cannot infer that Prakriti is the Anandamaya Purusha, since it is inert, and also because the text states that the Purusha has desire. According to their theory, jivas are all-pervading, since then an all-pervading jiva is in contact with all-pervading Prakriti. The jiva would undergo an unobstructed experience, enjoying or suffering. This phenomena, too, is not observed. The concept of samadhi, which is the goal of liberation, recommended by shastras, would be absent if Prakriti would be the agent, since Prakriti is inert. Early in Vedanta Sutta 143, tad adi natvad artavat, it was proved that pradhan is dependent on the supreme cause, Brahman, for producing effects. It cannot do this independently, since it is inert.
The second point, how is this connected to Prakriti? According to this theory, jivas are all pervading?
They're all pervading. Jiva, in other words, is that the Prakriti being, you know, what it is, you know, everything's that, so you could say all pervading. And then, and so they're doing everything. So the results, all that, are coming by them. So we already saw the previous one is who's doing the thing. The results are theirs. They're the ones who are enjoying or suffering. But we don't see material natures enjoying or suffering. And we see, and here is that if the material nature is, you know, and it's all pervading, it's everywhere. The jiva being all pervading, that overlap, that means whatever is done by the material nature, the jiva would enjoy or suffer. Right? But we don't see that either. You know what I'm saying? We don't see that whatever's happening anywhere, the jiva, because that would mean anything anywhere that's going on, then you would be enjoying or suffering that.
Yes.
You know? Otherwise, like right now, you could be enjoying the, you know, the balmy waves, you know, in some, how you say, Caribbean, you know, how you say, beach somewhere, you know? But you're not. Oh, close, but didn't quite make it, you know. So that's the thing. It's neither of these are observed, because these things are observable. That's the whole point. You hear from Shastra, then through Anuman, then you can then contemplate how it's applying, and you get to the point where then it's revealed, and you can actually see it. Like that. So whatever the Shastra is talking about, it is perceivable. So we don't see that anybody's observing this. Sages don't mention it. No one mentions it. So, even the liberated jiva is an agent. The liberated jiva situated in a sarup is, as well, the performer of actions that results in bliss, in contrast to the bound jiva's actions that only inflict him with miseries. Conversely, the actions of bhakti performed by the devotees are product of the chit potency, devoid of gunas. This is validated later in the concluding pada of this composition, Vedanta Sutra 4.4, 13-14. Tad vabhave sandhyavad upapatehe, and bhave jagradvat. That the liberated jiva, with or without a body, enjoys as if in waking or dream state, correspondingly. Since the liberated jiva has desires for enjoying, for whatever is given is the mercy of the Lord, because of his bhakti to the Lord, accepting it to please the Lord.
So the main point here that because the jiva has desires, that's why it makes him the doer?
Yeah, that's why he's connected with the results of his actions. So the point is the conditioned jiva, because they want to enjoy, then they perform materialistic activities that then brings them in line with the miseries and that of this world. While the liberated jivas, they don't have a sense of enjoyment, because they've given that up. So they have this sense that they want to perform activities to please Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point, is that then their enjoyment is Krishna's pleasure. Just like Krishna has, it's one of his qualities, he has no interest in enjoying the senses. So For him, it's simply the interaction of bhakti with the living entity. Yeah. So I would adjust this liberated jiva's desires for enjoying. Thus, it is successfully verified from every approach that the jiva is an agent primarily via dependency on the Lord, secondly via the gunas, and tertiary via his own shakti. And what we mean by own shakti means?
His own shakti means?
What's the shakti of the jiva? Jiva is a shakti, but he doesn't have shakti.
Desires?
Yeah, if you're taking desires that, but then why say shakti?
Okay.
Yeah, instead of saying he's shown shakti, just say desire.
Okay.
Okay? Oh, yes, can that be adjusted?
Yes, much, yes.
So you can, that point there. The liberated jiva has desires for enjoying. That's not defined here, so that should be.
It's defined over there.
Defined where is over there?
In the sutra itself.
Where in that sutra?
Ramavara is called.
Means which sutra says liberate jiva's desires for enjoyer?
These two sutras, 13, 14, 4, 13, 14.
And so then what does the acharyas say? What is that? How does he define that jiva has desires for enjoying?
The jiva wants to enjoy just to please the Lord. That is what they mean actually. That's why it is in the brackets. Accepting it to please the Lord. Accepting the enjoyment to please the Lord. That is why they have the desires for enjoying. What is that?
And how are you defining this enjoying?
Interaction with the Lord.
Yeah. So why not just say that? See, is that if using the sutra directly as it is works, then you do that. But if not, it needs more, then you have to expand it.
Uh-huh.
Right. Does that make sense? Mm. See, because the difficulty comes up. I'll give you an example. He's not here. He's not coming?
Mm.
Oh. That when Radharani is with Krishna and they're interacting, then the in the Kunj, then the other devotees are there, the maidservants and the shakyas and all that. Right? And because of their absorption in the arrangements for Radha and Krishna and for their pleasure, then we see that absorption comes to such an extreme. We see in Rupa that in the interaction, the symptoms of that interaction you see on the body of Rupa.
Yes,
Maharaj. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, we understand it's because that total absorption in Krishna.
Yes.
Right? But for the Sahajiyas, they'll take it that it's their enjoyment.
Yes.
Or another example, that Krishna, when Radharani is there, and the maidservants are there. So then Krishna, he's interacting with Radharani and the Astashaki, but also if the maidservants are there and they're close, he may also try to interact with them.
Yes, that's true.
Right? And so what do? They get annoyed and move away and go take shelter of Radharani. Right? Okay. Now, then, when the pastime is there, when they're they're taking the how you say the honey drink, the Varuni, then Radharani and the Astasaki might fall asleep. But the maidservants, because they're just making arrangements, so Krishna's still awake, so now he goes after the maidservants. Right? Okay. Now, in our understanding, that's not something that they're looking for, as we can see by the previous example. But according to the Sahajya, how you say, Acharyas, then they'll say is, well, Krishna's the independent Lord, he does as he likes, so if he wants to enjoy with us, then what can we do? You understand? It's a very subtle point. In other words, we're accepting the principle that the enjoyment's about us. In mentioning that, they're not talking about Krishna's pleasure. So we have to be very, very careful that in doing this, it doesn't come out with that flavor. Does that make sense? Because in other words, we have a severe allergy to the sahajiistic and Mayavadi approaches.
Yes.
So in Vedanta Sutra, where you're splitting hairs, then we can't have a hair, you know, that is improperly split. Does that make sense? Yeah, because in other words, you're bringing this in, but it makes it appear that they're the one, their desires for enjoying, but it's not defined because we're dealing with people who can't tell the difference between matter and spirit. So you can't bring in something from this higher aspect. They're the agent. Yes, they're doing things to please Krishna. They, of course, enjoy by that, but that's by Krishna's will. It's not by their intent. They're not doing it so they enjoy. They're doing it so Krishna enjoys. In that process, they'll be enjoying. So Krishna seeing them enjoying, then that makes him happy. Right? And the devotees seeing Krishna happy, they become more happy. So it's simply the ananda that they get from this. So it's not a matter of enjoying. So it's a very subtle point. We have to be very, very careful about this. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we can't just say it's there in the verse, because then what does it mean when it says the Lord has no qualities? So if we bring that up in the context of the impersonalist, and we also agree he has no qualities, now what are you going to think?
Impersonal.
Yeah. So you have to bring it up in the context that it's meant to be brought up in. So that you're bringing out that the liberated, that not only is the conditioned soul an agent, but the liberated soul is an agent, that's very good. That's a strong argument. But the point is that you have to make sure that you don't go into areas that go beyond that, because they're enjoying and this and that's not the discussion here. It's simply who's the agent. Right? Because if we're going to discuss the bliss, then that's a whole different thing. Then you have to, then that's a different discussion. Then they'll show what is blissful and what's not.
Because the logic was over here that one gets the bliss. Not,
yeah, but you didn't use bliss, you used enjoying.
Maharaj, this is not my word.
Hmm?
Okay, explain later.
When we say the jiva has shakti. Can we say that's just the instruments that we use?
Well, that is not clear here, because we're working in these realms where they're talking about Krishna and his Shakti, and he's controlling his energies and that, and then when we use the term here, it's not clear. So if it means that he, you know, through his own, you know, that little bit of ability that Krishna gives through his consciousness, he's able to apply through the senses, you know, the modes of nature, the senses and all that, by Krishna's potency. So they become a medium for that, because the life heirs. And so then if you're attributing that aspect to him, then it's fine. But the difficulty is, because we're generally using Shakti here, that, you know, you have Pradhan, we're not mentioning Pradhan Shakti, we have the Lord, he has his Shakti, and then we're mentioning the Jiva has his Shakti. So we have to be careful of the contexts. You know, then it just makes it more clear, because the point is all these things we can see it, all those, but it's where the focus is. right? Is it karma yoga or is it sarva dharma parityaja? So when you're dealing with liberated souls, it's the second. So we can't have it have the flavor of the first. Okay. So, Samayavadikarna 14, Vishaya. Now the following text is discussed. Taittiriya Upanishad says, Vijnanam yajnam tanute karmani tanute picha. Knowledge performs sacrifice and performs actions.
Who is knowledge?
Who's knowledge?
Who is knowledge and who is knowledge?
Well, Krishna is knowledge. So he's doing the things, but because the living entity identifies with it. So you always have to take it back to the one thing. There isn't different. It's just a matter of whether you're dealing with it in its, you know, what's happening at face value, or you have to keep taking it back. So wherever, at what point it actually makes sense with the philosophy, that's where you use it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Just make it. It seems that everything is in context. Subhi. So, what devotees usually do, sometimes do, they take things in it from different contexts, put them in the context they're used to.
Yes. Yes.
And it makes a lot of difference.
Yes, it does. So that's the whole point. That's the meaning of chala. You've taken it into. So it may be that they're not doing it on purpose.
Unconsciously.
Yeah. Like that. Well, someone else may be using it as a technique of argument.
Yes.
But the point is that you have the principles of Krishna and who he is, the jivas, who they are. And so then, but the point is it's about, when we're talking about relationship or rasa, Then you have the dynamics of that interaction. Now the question comes up is that when it's happening on the transcendental platform, then you don't really get into you don't have to get into the impersonal and paramatma aspects of it. Because in the spiritual world, then simply that personal aspect between all the Lord and his Shaktis, then that interaction is all that's needed to be discussed because it's already on the transcendental platform. When you come into the material world, the difficulty comes up is that the living entity is not including the Lord. So even though it's his energies that makes it all happening. So we're not including the Lord means we are not seeing his position as the controller of these things. And at the same time is we're putting ourselves in the position as the controller and enjoyer. And so now you really have a problem. So that's illusion. So that's why then we have to make the distinction. Otherwise, then if we don't, then when we look at the spiritual world, then from the spiritual platform, then we're going to have the difficulty of projecting our mundane concepts onto, you know, Krishna and his devotees. You know, so. We make the distinction between Brahman and Paramatma for our understanding so that we know how to connect everything to Krishna. But in the spiritual world, you don't have to make that distinction. Not that they couldn't, but why do you need to? Since the person who is doing that is standing right next to you. You know, so there's no need. Does that make sense? In this text here, then we have these two verses from 4:13-14 being quoted.
Mm-hmm.
And Bhave Jagradvat. It says, since the liberated jiva has desires for enjoying.
Yeah.
What is the context of that?
I think, Maharaj, it means that he wants to enjoy by serving the Lord.
Okay, so then that should be, that aspect should be brought out. Since we're dealing in a different context,
yeah.
You know, this is coming from the Prayojana section, which is fine enough because it establishes the point. But we have to be sure that the context that it's in that Prayojana section is brought out. You know, by the wording we do, or by, you know, adding in a few more, you know, things like that. Otherwise, then the problem comes is, since we're trying to establish, you know, the, you know, who's the enjoyer here, you know, who's the agent, then it comes out, you know, it doesn't come out in the proper fashion. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
Shamshaya, is the jiva who is knowledge the doer, the agent, or not? Purva Paksha. So then their argument. The following Shruti denies that jiva is an agent. The jiva cannot be an agent. Prakriti is the agent. So, hanta chen manyate hantum hatas chen manyate hatam. Ubhau tau na vijani tau nayam hanti nahanyate. One who thinks the jiva is the killer and one who thinks that he is killed, both do not know. The jiva does not kill, nor is killed. Katha Upanishad 1:2:19. Very similar to the Gita, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a valid point.
Yes. So that's the thing, is they're taking that and then coming up with their philosophy. Because they're leaving the Lord out of it. Because they're saying, he does not kill. He's not killed, nor is his killing. So where does that place him? Right? He's not the doer then. Right? So who is doing this? Who is killing and who's being killed? So they'll say Prakriti. That's the point. They won't take it back to the Lord, because the Lord just doesn't feature in their philosophy. Right? That's all. So all it is that they'll attribute things that belong to one person to another. Is that? Yeah. Smritis also confirm this. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. The person bewildered by pride thinks that he is the doer of actions, which are being done completely by the body. Senses and pranas made of prakriti. Bhagavad Gita 3:27. Karana kartritve hetu prakritir uchite purusha shuka dukanam bokritve hetu uchite. Prakriti is said to be a cause, instrumental in producing the body and senses. The jiva is said to be a cause, being the enjoyer of happiness and distress.
Mm-hmm.
Bhagavad Gita 13:21. Now, quoting from this, then they're saying that the jiva is the same prakriti is a cause, but also in the same thing says jiva is said to be a cause.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not somehow or another. I'm just catching that one. Therefore, the jiva is not the doer agent; it is prakriti. This is understood from discerning the truth. The jiva falsely attributes himself to be the agent and becomes the enjoyer of the fruits of his actions. So, in other words, they're taking part of what's correct.
Yes.
But they're not taking it all the way. They won't take it back to the Lord.
Yes.
That's the difficulty.
Yes.
That's the weakness here. Siddhanta, the sutra
nice.
Part.
Hmm. Nice. You depend always on the intent.
Hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah, because their intention, they had a different intention. They're not, their intention is not to develop a service attitude, loving service attitude towards the Lord.
Yeah.
And because of that, then they come up with all these funny philosophies like that. So that's the whole difficulty, is that the materialists, they all have an ulterior motive.
Yeah.
In somehow or another, you know, here blaming someone else, but at the same time he's the enjoyer. He gets all the results. What can we do? You know, like I was saying before, this Hajj is, what can we do? It's happening. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful that we don't fall into these traps. Because up to a point it seems the same, and then it changes. So the point is if we know the philosophy, then we know what is similar. And when it's not, we know what's different. Just like when we're talking about accepting the Vedic culture, and following the principles of the Vedic culture. And because of that, then there is great benefit. Then Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada will include, you know, people like you know, Mahatma Gandhi, Vivekananda, and these others, because they are accepting, and that, and because of that, that's where they're being recognized. Right? So up to that point, it's the same. Now, when you go a step further on giving up the impersonal, you know, mundane impersonal concept and accepting the personal concept, then he'll leave them out. You know, now if he talks about becoming detached from the world and that the world is not actually where you're going to enjoy, you have to go beyond the world, he'll include Shankaracharya, but drop Mahatma Gandhi and Vivekananda and them. Right? Now when he goes to that personal aspect, therefore going to that transcendental place beyond here, then you accept that relationship and connection with the Lord and serve the Lord, then he'll drop Shankaracharya and leave the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. So we have to understand is that there's one path. There's not many paths. But you have to know the whole path. So that's what we're doing here, is we're learning all the different aspects of the path, so that if we see at some point it's wrong, then it's wrong. But up to that point, it may be right. You know, it's just like we're saying. Sahajas, they'll do Hare Krishna Kirtan, Dungas and Kartals, they'll sing the traditional tunes, like that. So that's all correct. You know, they get together and then do kirtan, you know, or do 24-hour kirtan. They won't call it 24-hour kirtan. They'll call it Astaprahar kirtan. Right? So they're doing like that, and that's fine. But the problem is that where have they gotten the mantra from? What's their purpose? So they haven't got it from Parampara. So it doesn't have that chit potency. So basically all it does is that all that jumping up and down just, you know, gets their bile moving and lunch is digested very well. But as far as spiritual benefit, it won't be there. It'll get material piety because the Shastras say to chant, you know, this is the age, you do Harinam Kirtan, they will get material piety from it. But they won't get spiritual because it's not connected to the Sampradaya. Does that make sense? Just like the materialist, he follows the Shastra, does the yajna, or gives in charity, or does something. He'll always get benefit. But because when he does something connected to the devotees, then he'll get that agyata sukriti, the devotional benefit. But otherwise, then they'll just get the material benefit. So if it's recommended and you do it, you'll always get benefit. But spiritual means it has to be in connection with the spiritual. You know, then it has to be have the proper authorization. Does that make sense?
In knowledge, it must be constant, because here we see that actually they are putting many clever arguments, you know, in order to avoid.
Yeah, no, they're always clever, because they have. What else do they have to do? They sit around and think about these things.
Yeah. It's. With the material consciousness is quite elevated.
Yes. That means you're talking about the, in these six schools, you're talking about the top philosophers in the universe.
Yes.
Right? So there's no one's going to be more philosophical than them. That's why we say is that all other philosophies are going to be following these six. Not that they're speaking from the six, but the elements that are there within them, those same mistakes, they're always going to be speaking. So you're always going to have karma and jnana, and they're going to be speaking according to that. It's just, and they'll take from here a little bit, there a little bit. But, and whether they, the Vedic, then you see that they have quite a broad range. But when you go outside of the Vedic, then it's not actually that well thought out. It, you know, they talk a lot and it takes up volumes, so it appears, like I said, it was that one very big businessman. Somehow though, we ended up visiting his house, because when we went to the office, he was always too busy, so he invited us to come over after work or on an off day or something. And then somehow or another, he's talking about one Indian yogi. He's written volumes of work. And his conclusion was, is he has to be, because this is a very successful guy. So according to the material platform, he's smart, right? And so then he was making the point that this guy, this yogi, must be so advanced because I've read all his books. I don't understand one word he's saying. So it must be transcendental. Okay, you know, so. Like that. But, so that's the difficulty, is that the mundane concepts don't work very good. You know, it'll work amongst materialists because someone's more thoughtful, so they go, "Oh yeah, right."
But you see, without constant guidance, it's very easy to deviate.
Yes, that's why we see Krishna says is that you have to take up the spiritual, but the first thing you have to do is then surrender to the spiritual master. Then, under the guidance of the spiritual master, then you.
Yes.
Then you follow the process. Right? And even the previous acharyas, they give so many details, but we follow those according to the direction given by our acharyas.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
If we surrender 50%, we don't have the same result.
No, it won't quite work out as good like that.
Yes.
So here is that, see, the difficulty comes up is that the enjoying aspect is still remaining.
Yes.
While we see is that the concept to enjoy is given up by the liberated souls. Right? So we mean that means only the ones who are actually liberated. Because you're impersonalist, they still have the idea they will enjoy on this spiritual platform. You know, so the Brahmananda. So they haven't actually given up, so that's why they stay here. Because enjoyment is here. Bliss is there.
Yes.
It's different. Right? So one's Shuka. And one's Ananda. So one has to be careful of that. In using them, that is very clear that when you're talking about liberated souls, we're talking about Ananda.
Yes.
In that context. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, we use the same words, it makes appear that it's Shuka.
Yes.
Like that. Because they don't have any desire themselves to enjoy. They want to see Krishna enjoying, and that's their enjoyment. You know what I'm saying? So we see that to some degree, at least externally, in, you know, good relationships between people. They're trying to please the other person. Ultimately, of course, it's about themselves. But we see in the spiritual world, ultimately, it's just about Krishna. So beginning to end, it's not about themselves. Not that that happiness is inherent in the jiva. So bliss is inherent. So naturally, if it's going that way, they'll feel blissful. But that's because they're contacting Krishna's bliss. Make that. So just to make that distinction, seeing that we've, you know, going through the 11th canto, so that point is being made many, many times, so then we have to keep that flavor. Right? Otherwise, then you get this and somebody goes off with this. Right? Because it's just like what you're saying, they just take the words. They just take the words and then use them how they like. So the words, how they're used here, are meant in one way, but we'll use them. No, but they have a desire. They want to enjoy. They want to be happy.
Yes, thank you.
So then, whatever mercy Krishna gives, but that's karma yoga. Right? So here is their meaning in the context of serving Krishna, and then whatever comes up from that, then they're taking part in it. But that's not their motive. The motive is pleasing Krishna. They're happy anyway from this process. So we have to, it's a slight difference. It's whether you're coming from here to there or from there to here. Right, because when you use liberated, you have to there on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And since we're not there yet, then
yes.
We have to just see that it's the context is right.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Sutra 2.3.31. Karta Shastarta Vat. Karta, the doer, Shastra of the scriptures, Arta, meaning, Vat, possessing, Twat, because of having the nature. The jiva is the doer because this gives meaning to the scriptures. Sutra Vikashika. The Sutra explicates that shastras give instructions in the performance of specific activities to a conscious being, the jiva, and not the unconscious prakriti. Right? What do you need the shastras for prakriti if it's unconscious? right? Like, so let's say we have a rock. We take a Bhagavad Gita out, we open it to a page, come back after a day, it's still on the same page, right? Come back after a week, it'll still be there. So we could look at it, okay, well, you have ants, they're like trees, they're really slow when they talk and stuff like that, so the rock must be even slower, so maybe it just takes them a few weeks to get through a page and all that. Right? But then, why would things be moving at the speed they are? Right? So the point is the Shastras are not for Prakriti.
She doesn't use the manual? She doesn't use the manual?
I think since time immemorial, it's pretty well memorized. that's why it says she knows what to do, she just does. It's always under Krishna's sanction, because she only does what is sanctioned by Krishna. Right? But in the standard things, the materialist, she just does what is supposed to be done. Right? With the devotees, then you see there, it will be specifically according to Krishna's sanction, because there, it's working differently. It's not working under karma. So it's not working under the material, under the modes of nature. She will get the things done as directed by the Lord. You know, so she still uses the modes, but she's not applying. Right? It's just following the direction. It means she's always just following the direction of the Lord. But then, because Krishna karma may act outside of the normal path of karma, therefore then, you know, it has to be seen in that context. Does that make sense? So she's just an instrument for the Lord. Right? And the jiva, because they identify, then they're called the doer, because they say, this is mine. This is myself, and what I've done is mine. So then, okay, let's see how that goes. You know, it's just like when they say, yeah, I can do this and that, yeah, that's nothing, you know. I say, okay, let's see, you know. You know, it's that's the natural way it works. You know, so Krishna, okay, let's see how this goes. You know, how did that work out for you last time, right? It didn't work out, but no, you know. Sutra Vakashika. The Sutra Kar. Okay, we did that. Sri Govindabhasya. Siddhanta. The jiva is the agent, not the gunas. Why? Because only the jiva's being agent gives meaning to the scriptural injunctions. Shastrartha Vatvata. Sarga Kamo Yajeta. Zairing Swarga, one should perform sacrifice. Apastamba Shrauta Sutra, 19:10-14. Atmanam eva lokam upasita. Upasita. One should worship the visible Lord. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1:4-15. Right? Because dead matter doesn't see the Lord. Right? So that means who's seeing? The living entity. Scriptures have meaning only if we accept a conscious agent. They would be meaningless if the gunas were the agent, because they're unconscious. The scriptures inspire the intellect by promising results and engaging the person in action to enjoy the result. They cannot inspire the intellect of insentient gunas. Footnote 53. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the jiva is a doer since he is conscious. It is not natural that an unconscious object can be a doer. Being a doer is also observed to be the equivalent of consciousness. It is a quality of the jiva. The action seen in an unconscious object arises from relationships with the antaryami, or from control of a jiva. For instance, milk flows from the breast because the breast is related to the jiva. Thus, being a doer is a quality of the conscious jiva. This is stated in Brahma Sutra 2:3-31-37. Vijnanam yagyam tanote karmani tanote picha. Knowledge, jiva, performs sacrifice and performs action. Okay, so they're putting here because he's conscious, therefore he's knowledge. Taittiriya Upanishad 2:5-1. Vijnanam does not mean intelligence in this text.
But what does it mean? Knowledge?
It means jiva.
Jiva. Like that. Because the jiva is conscious, so therefore he's where he's applying. So it doesn't mean, means the context of knowledge, one who has knowledge. You know, that kind of thing, where you're talking generic, being specific to the jiva. Because he is someone who can know, so therefore he has knowledge. Because of his consciousness. So there must be some other aspect that they're bringing out. So therefore, then, in this context, he's referred to as knowledge. Right? Because in other places, they're talking about, in the Shikshavali, they're just talking about, because this is two. Yeah, this is Anandavali. They're talking about knowledge and the different aspects of it, but they're just talking about knowledge, not the jiva. Right? So it's like saying, not remembering the detail. No. But it's talking about you have the upper form, you have the lower form of knowledge, and you have what connects them. Like the teacher and the student. So the teacher is the upper form of this process of education. The student is the lower form. Because if you have a teacher, there's no student, then education is not happening. If you have a student without a teacher, it's not happening. So you have to have both. But what's the connection? It's the knowledge.
Yes.
Right? So like that, it goes through these five different aspects. So there it's talking about knowledge because it's called Shikshavali. But in here, this is Anandavali. And so then it'll be bringing out the levels of happiness that is experienced by the jivas. So in this aspect, then the jiva is performing sacrifice, performing actions, he gets a particular result or a particular happiness from that. Does that make sense? And depending on the quality of that, then that will situate him higher and higher.
Even earlier we saw about the word prajna. So prajna means intelligence in the ordinary sense. But we saw that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he referred to prajna as love and devotion. So one who has intelligence is engaged in love and devotion.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
That's similar way.
Yes, similar. So it's just a matter of how far you're taking it and what's the purpose there. So that's what we mean by the context, is that you see the context they're taking because the jiva being conscious, he has knowledge. And then using that knowledge, he can use it for proper points, you know, performing sacrifice and performing actions, or he can use it improperly. Okay. So it's not that things change. They don't. They're there, but it's just that has that range. You know, it's like we have this flower here. Okay, so it's a flower, right? So that's there, but does it have color? Yeah, so and we'll say it's rose, right, color. Right, so, but you can have something else that's rose colored. Right, this is very similar to his sweater. You know? So, but when we say rose color there, we're talking about the color of the sweater, not means it's connected to the rose, but we're not talking about a rose. Does that make sense? You know, or then there's fragrance of it, or there's different, the aesthetics of it, or, so they're all part of that. That's why then the aspect of, the point of Nirupta is you understand the range of qualities that are there. But then they have to be applied to which one applies to the context of the verse that's being discussed. Because otherwise, then, that's the difficulty if you just have the regular dictionaries. You know, these ones done by, how you say, non-Vedic scholars or modern scholars. For them, it's just words. It's not the roots and how it goes back. Though you do see that you do still have this aspect of showing how it goes back to Latin or Greek or, you know, or from the English into French or into German or just, you know, Spanish or something. They'll show those things. But it's not so much about that. It's just supporting their point as opposed to how much is meaning. Like most words you give, you'll get one meaning, one or two meanings, two or three. But there are some words that they'll have 15, 20 different ways it can be used. You know, some of the ones that are more used and have more of a context. Is that, yeah. So, understanding that range, then you see what's the context in which the acharyas are speaking, so that way then you use it. Is that?
There's always a, when we speak about chit, there's a knowledge and consciousness. They're always
Yes. So in this case, yes, that would be a very good point. Because here, knowledge, because he's chit.
Yes.
So we're bringing out that aspect because he's conscious, therefore he's engaged in activities, right? Because otherwise, how is he doing the performing sacrifice and performs actions? Yes. That's the abhideya aspect. That's the chit part.
Yes.
So that is based on knowledge. Because if you don't have knowledge, then what are you doing? It won't be a sacrifice. It won't be an action. It'll just be. Does that make sense? Like children, they don't accomplish anything because there's no knowledge.
Yes.
Right? So the point is the aspect is that's a very good connection. Because that makes it very clear that we're talking about that. But before we're talking that the liberator, we're talking about the Ananda aspect.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But you have to. But the point is because we are talking about these materialists, we have to be very careful.
Yes.
Now, if we were already in a section where we're talking about prayojana, and the context is understood, and then we were talking about the enjoyment of the liberated soul, then it would work.
Yes.
But when we're dealing in another context where materialists and they're just dying to enjoy themselves and find any excuse, we don't want to give them any excuse.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So then it shifts how you would use it.
Yes.
But you're talking about the same thing. You know, it's just like when you're talking with somebody and you say something and they react badly and then you start to adjust the presentation, right? And until you find that they're not grumpy, right? So, yeah.
Quite often.
Quite often. Yes. It's what mother would say is, how you say? As a direction for this kind of situation that, you know, that you always find yourself in, then it's kind of like the, how you say, I guess snarky perspective of, open mouth, insert foot. Right, you know. And then you start talking and therefore whatever you say is going to be wrong. Right? So the point is, you know, think about what you're saying, then you won't end up with your foot in your mouth, right? So, no? You all have that saying? Have that concept?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So it seems to be pretty universal, right?
It's a principle, it's not a detail.
Sorry?
It's a principle, not a detail.
Yeah, it's a principle, not a detail, yes. Yeah. Okay.
So then, like the particular point, you know, about the liberated jiva enjoying, that means others will take it out of context.
You have to be careful because in Vedanta Sutra we're dealing with defeating the you could say non-Vaishnava perspective. As opposed to, you know, in other words, you're defeating the materialistic perspective, as opposed to establishing the devotional, you know, discussing the ocean of devotion, right?
Yes.
So if it's nectar devotion, then the context has already been given in the, you know, in the aspects of Samanya Bhakti. So the first five chapters, they're already giving the context from, you know, how you say, Shraddha to Prema. So then, based on these definitions and everything, then the rest of it is seen. And so then you can just continue, because he already, in the introduction to the book, already basically makes the point, if you're not basically a devotee who is... purpose is developing pure love for Krishna, then put the book down and walk away. And he gives a list of who are the kind, just in case you don't understand, who are the people that should put the book down. Like that. So it's already, it's not for them, because it's not the language, because otherwise then you always have to guard everything. It's very hard to discuss things.
Yes.
Like if you're talking with someone who's very, how you say, steeped in political correctness. You can't talk anything with them. Doesn't matter what it is, they'll find some way to take it out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have those discussions with them. You have political discussions with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But for the devotees, then you're going to have that context. So Vedanta Sutra, though it's establishing devotional service, it's establishing the Dasa Mool aspects, but it's doing that with those who are materialists. Right, in either karma or jnana. Does that make sense?
Yes,
so one always has to be careful that the words that are used directly in the translation, most of the time we see, up to this point, they all worked.
Yes.
But this one, then you have to take the context that is given in the Govinda Bhasya to see what is meant by that, and you might use some other words. Since there's a whole... It's not that we're just quoting one sutra after another. We're putting in our own words here to bring out as the Prakashika, we are trying to explain it so that it makes it easy when we do actually deal with it, that we're prepared and have an appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use some of that in your explanation.
Yeah. So Maharaj, can we do something like that was from the Prayojan and this is now Sambandha still going on. So then when... we are using something from the Prayojan into the Sambandha.
Right.
Then can we give a footnote over there or a note where we say that this is what actually it means? So that
that I would have a tendency in that because to just bring it out because it's a very major. If it's something like, you know, you say, you know, and so, you know, taking the seven items, he did this, then... If it's something that's been studied, we don't quite remember, that goes as a footnote. But something like this, I would tend to just, because all this words around that sutra is worth speaking. Does that make sense? You know, everything around this whole section, is we're putting in our words. We're just quoting the direct Sanskrit and mentioning the translation, but we have to see that we, in our explanation, bring it to the context that doesn't take it out of context so that we appreciate it in this context. Because giving proof from one side and the other, then that's what gives it its strength. So you're showing within one aspect of Sambandha, another aspect within Abhideya, within prayer. You show from so many aspects that this is the correct thing, and that makes it strong. That's good, but you just have to see that when we're explaining, we don't just leave it in that way, especially since this point of enjoyment, that's the whole thing that came up. Jiva is the opponents claim that the jiva is the enjoyer, so then here we're supporting that. That the liberated jiva is the enjoyer.
Yeah. Because how it goes back is that the jiva is the enjoyer, or rather, the liberated jiva is the enjoyer. That means he's experiencing the rasa, the bliss.
Yeah, but it hasn't been said. Hasn't been said. That's what has to be it. So why use enjoyer? Why not just use absorbed in the bliss of pure devotional service or pleasing the Lord? Or why not use that? It means the same thing.
So the actual point is that, you know, one gets bliss not just by sitting, you know, but by actually working and application. That means he is the
It's going beyond that, because that's the context you're doing here. Is that, you know, the mode of ignorance, they do nothing. Mode of passion, they do things, they get their bliss or their happiness. What we're saying is that it's because it's connection to the Lord, that's why they're happy. Otherwise, why mention the liberated soul? Liberated soul is beyond the material, so it's not about cause and effect. Because in the spiritual world, it's not about cause and effect. It's about pleasing Krishna. So we can't use their position in the context of cause and effect. We have to use it in the context of that it's in connection with the Lord. Otherwise, don't bring up the liberated jivas. Just stick to the logic that we use down here. And amongst us conditioned souls, and we can, dukes it out. Right?
Because it is...
Because the liberated jiva is also part of the adhikarana. That's why it's the point.
Yes.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying, if you're going to bring them in their transcendental position.
Yes,
don't
sir.
Use just the same words.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. You know, unless it's one of those, he walks but he does not walk. You know, then it's fine. He says he enjoys but he does not enjoy. You know,
so. Maybe it's better to just read the Sanskrit.
But I'm saying you're bringing it in, so then you want to explain it. I'm saying because we're using our words, so why not explain it?
Yes.
That's the point. It's not like you're just giving the direct quote, and that's it.
Mm.
You know, like some of these ones, you know, at the bottom of the page,
quoting,
we just...
Huh? I'm quoting directly. I'm not using my words for the sutras.
Right.
Only the other parts is my words. The paragraphs in the article itself.
Yes, so that's the whole point, is that this whole paragraph, even the liberated jiva is an agent, that's mm-hmm. your words.
Yes, Maharaj.
Yes, so why not put some of your words in here to explain about this point for enjoying?
Okay, that is what you expect. Fine, Maharaj, I got it now.
Well, yes,
okay.
It's fine if this is the exact translation of that. But then you should continue that to explain. Because
yes,
if you say, jiva has desires for enjoying, for whatever is given is the mercy of the Lord. Okay. But then that means that I have the desire to enjoy, and then whatever the Lord gives us in that context, then I will enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's devotional. It's connected to Him, but it's called karma yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's not called bhakti. Right?
So
not that this element, that this aspect of karma is not coming from bhakti, but the bhakti, they're not doing it, that just perform the action and then sit back. It's like you perform, means Yudhishthira Maharaj says that three things are necessary for activity to you know, for results. Is that you have to have knowledge or focus. He uses focus, because focus means you have the knowledge, you have the attitude, you have the understanding. So he uses focus. Then he says endeavor, right? Because that means that something's going on. And then he says, and for a result, depending upon the Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
So this is this shows this dependence on the mercy of the Supreme. But it's in the context that it can be karma.
Yes.
Right? This is what Narad Muni was talking about. What was the weakness in Mahabharata? Is that people could take it in a mundane context.
Yes.
And not take it in a spiritual context.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to avoid that fault, since we're dealing with Vedanta Sutra, you know, which is supposed to be the essence of the Vedas, and we know the conclusion given by the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
So in that context, then we have to be careful.
I'll give more explanations wherever required.
Yes, that's all. You just have to bring it to the point of pure devotion. Otherwise, this leaves it in the realm of just karma. And we're presenting pure devotion. We'll talk about that people can use karma. And that's fine. But it has to be understood that what its position and relationship is to pure devotion. But liberated souls are not going to be engaged in karma yoga. They may be engaging their activities in the Lord's service. So from that point, you can say karma yoga. But that's not the context of this. We have that. There's a whole chapter in, I think, Nectar of Renunciation. Renunciation through wisdom. Is that what it's called in English?
Prabhupada's book?
Yeah.
Yes.
So one chapter is on karma yoga. Like this, but it's showing everybody. It's talking about pure devotional service, just engaging all your activities in the Lord's service. Like that. So, yeah. But the difficulty comes is because many don't appreciate the position of karma yoga. I'm not sure that in the translation they don't use bhakti. Because I remember there was a discussion when they were translating what word to use there.
Maharaj, back to your point that in the beginning, Rupa Goswami explains, if you're not a devotee, don't even bother reading.
Yeah.
In the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita also.
In reading?
In the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Oh, okay.
Also, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he also
says, the materialists, they won't understand this book at all. And this gives me great pleasure.
Yes.
The next verse he says, what can be more blissful than this?
Yeah, because it means it's purely transcendental. Because if they understood anything, it's not transcendental. So that's all in his Mangalacharan.
It is in the first, somewhere in the beginning of the, between first and seventh chapter, somewhere in this.
Okay, no, but I'm saying it's in the explanation of his Mangalacharan.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Nice. Coming up, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes they say this thing, like some village people are there, they take Prabhupada books, and they become so happy by reading the expressions of Prabhupada. They are not much educated.
Yes.
But sometimes we see they are very so-called pandits or something, or PhDs or intellectuals. They read Prabhupada books, and they go very crazy, like, oh, why is this, like this, like that.
Because they have their own mundane concepts of what the words mean. Because the point is all the, in the material world, all you have is words.
Mm.
You know? And unfortunately, the word doesn't really express it, so. You know? So all they have is words. So for them, the word means a specific thing. And if you're not presenting it in that specific way, then they get upset. You know, so they'll have all their own. While this, like you said, the simple person, then they read it, they don't know, then they just accept it. Because it's authority, it makes sense, it's, you know, it's natural. You know, they see all these things because they're dealing in a more personal way.
Yes.
So then they appreciate it. While the scholars tend to be a little bit more impersonal, so they can't actually appreciate it. Yeah, so that's why we say the innocent.
Yes.
So where, that's what we mean, and then the preaching, where does it flow? Where does it, who's taking it? Who's going somewhere with it? You know, taking it meaning having faith in it, and, you know, moving forward, you know, even to the point of accepting the association and practice. That's where you go, because like we said, Prabhupada was there in, you know, upper Manhattan, and it wasn't going anywhere. People like to hear and all that because they're into Indian stuff. That's what we're saying, is those generally from more, you know, cultured or rich or kind of backgrounds, generally they have zero problem with discussing cultures of other parts of the world. And if it's just like if you had a group, I mean, this is my experience, you know, others may be different, but you had a group of, let's say, intellectuals, and there was a, you know, a program going to happen on Tibetan Buddhism, and one of the, you know, some practicing member of the Tibetan Buddhism was going to come and speak. So that would be a big draw. They'd want to go and hear. Now, if the guy showed up in the same kind of karmic clothes they were wearing, you would be seriously disappointed.
Yeah.
Because the culture and what they're going to speak, it goes together. Because if you speak this, you live this, you also practice it. So the more he walks in wearing his Buddhist outfits, the better. And if he has a few paraphernalia with him, that's even better yet. And if you came in and the whole place was set up like a, you know, a Tibetan monastery, now that would be ecstasy. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you expect these things to go together. So the difficulty comes is that these intellectuals will only work in areas that they appreciate. You know what I'm saying? So you'll get some that are much more narrow. You know, in other words, the cultural aspects aren't very strong in them. So you'll generally see those ones that go against it, especially if they're Indians. They're not into the culture. They don't accept necessarily the Vedic culture. Or if they do, they accept a specific aspect, like they're impersonalist or they're Shaktas or something like that. But if they're trying to be modern and, you know, very intellectual and be accepted in the contemporary scholastic world, then anything that refers to any aspect of Vedic culture where, it would be a practice or it be a faith, then immediately they're going to have objection because it goes against their identity, because they're not cultured. You understand? So these others, they're cultured, but they're very simple. We take it that culture means sophistication. No, culture means, you know, your ability to interact and acceptance and all those things. That's culture. And then someone's very simple, then that it's done in a very simple way. And it's accepted. Those who are cultured accept it. Those who aren't would go, they're poor. So that's, and we saw 12th canto in Kali Yuga, that's how it's defined. You're rich, you know, then you're okay. And if you're poor, you're not. It doesn't matter if you have something, you know, valuable to say, it doesn't matter. If you're rich, then that's the whole point. So if you're rich and no culture, everybody will leave you alone. They don't, maybe you don't like, but they'll leave you alone. You're okay in that way. You know what I'm saying? But if you have knowledge and you're not wealthy, then very few people will accept it. Because their point is, if the knowledge is so good, why haven't you made money from it yet? You know, why isn't it recognized? Why aren't people paying you?
Yeah. That's why they don't appreciate Brahminical culture, because Brahmanas are simple.
Yeah. That's the thing. They're simple. And so you might have sophisticated Brahmins, but it's not necessary. You can be a first-class Brahmin and not actually be very sophisticated. You'd be very clean and do everything right and all that, but you don't necessarily, you know, socially sophisticated. So that's something, you know. So that's the difficulty. They're looking at it that this external, mundane kind of sophistication, that's the symptom of advancement. But it's not necessary. So if you're in those environments, you use it. But if you're not, you don't. Like Srila Prabhupada, he could dress and do things very sophisticated according to those, but using our culture, using the Gaudiya culture. And at the same time, it's like Rick, who was saying, I think the first time when he took devotees back to India, and that, then it was summer, and so Prabhupada was just wearing, you know, taking his dhoti and just putting it under his arms and around and tying it behind his neck. So he was just wearing a single piece of cloth. It was so hot. So it's just very simple, like all the sadhus are doing. So it's like that. It's whatever that you're in Vrindavan and it's summer. It's like who's on a dress parade. Right? So you just do. But then when he's, you know, meeting, you know, people in the West, then, you know, he'll dress according to the situation. Right? Yeah. Okay. Eshahi drashta sprashta shrotra rasayita grata manta bodha karta Vijnanatma Purusha. The jiva is the seer, the toucher, the hearer, the taster, the smeller, the thinker, the comprehender, the doer, and the knower. Prashna Upanishad 4.9. That was pretty obvious, that quote. You know, it'd be very hard for them to...
So the thinker?
Yeah, you know, to go against all this one. Yo Vijnane Tishtan. Jiva is situated in knowledge. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.7.22. The jiva is well known as having vijnana. Tad esham pranam vijnanena vijnanam adaya. The jiva takes knowledge by knowledge of the pranas. Pranan gritva. Right, so through the, he takes knowledge by the pranas. The pranas means then they control the senses. Right, so then through the senses, through the pranas, that's how he's going. So that's his connection, is to the pranas. Pranan gritva. Jiva takes up the pranas. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 2.1, 17-18. Since it is stated that the jiva takes pranas, the knowledge of jiva must be a doer. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandananda.